Daily Renegade family, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for this interview. It is a somber day. 18 years ago, our country experienced one of the worst catastrophes that has, well, to date. There's not one that's greater. I mean, we've had civil war, we've had various things happen throughout this country's history, but this trumps them all, I think. And it's nefarious. It's a nefarious subject. It's sad. It's sad. Gosh, so many people just gave their lives that day trying to protect each other. The outcome of this of the event was control. The outcome of the event was war. And so it was huge. And as you guys are watching this, you're probably aware of the event that I'm talking about. It was the planes crashing into the World Trade Centers on September 11th, 2001. And so Mike and I today are going to be discussing various aspects of this. And so it's going to be a somber yet informative show for you guys. And I'm excited that you guys have joined because I think we need to understand this information, both from an occult perspective and from a scientific perspective. And so it's going to be a fun discussion. I'm going to be sharing a little bit of the scientific aspect. And then Mike's going to be sharing with us a little bit more about the occult significance of the numbers, of the events, of the days, of the all of that jazz that goes into stuff like this. And we know, I can just tell you from a scientific standpoint that this event was set up, that there was something that the government is trying to hide. There was an outcome that they wanted, and they got it. I mean, the Patriot Act was put forth hours after the event happened, and so you know that this wasn't something that wasn't planned. And so there's been various shows on this. You guys can look up YouTube, but I thought it would be cool for you guys to present this from two different viewpoints. Like I said, the scientific and the more spiritual things that go on in our government and that type of thing. So all that being said, if you guys are new to the Daily Renegade, I'm sure you guys stumbled across this because of some of the names that have been involved at the channel, including Josh Peck, including Thomas Dunn and Jared Kressman with Through the Black, and Jason and Lauren with the Z Files. There's the Peck Report. Man, we just hired Drew and Bree Gaffia. Man, I'm excited for their show. It's really cool what they're doing. And so the Daily Renegade is a platform that's given to various hosts around the world to host their show. And through this, it's becoming like a Netflix of Christian fringe topics and all that stuff. And it's not only just for videos, it's also for articles, it's also for news. It's also becoming more and more like a little social media platform. And the whole reason that this site was developed was because of the censorship that various people are receiving on free platforms like YouTube and other big named platforms like that. And so just specifically, we've been censored on YouTube multiple times, getting videos removed without any explanation as to why, other than bogus bogus statements and reasons presented to us. And we've had our rights to upload videos and to live stream on YouTube taken away because of the content that's in the videos. And it's not content that's not seen anywhere else on YouTube. And so it's just crazy that they seem to be targeting specific people, and we've been one of those. So all that to say, consider becoming a member because you get access to exclusive content. You get videos that aren't presented on these free websites like Brighteon or some of those other ones, YouTube, Facebook. You get exclusive articles written by various hosts. We got Gary Wayne and Ryan Peterson contributing to the Daily Renegade. And so you get exclusive content from them that you won't see anywhere else. And so it's worth the $9.95 a month or $95 a year. We're also upgrading because of all the hosts that we're bringing into different levels of membership. And so you have that opportunity to get into some of that stuff. when you visit out the website, but you can see that in the affiliate link below. Go ahead and click it, and you guys get a whole plethora of information. You get topics ranging from biblical eschatology to satanic ritual abuse and what's going on in the sex trafficking world, and so it's definitely worth your money. Okay, all that to say, let's dive into today's discussion, man. It's going to be super good. So I'm going to introduce Mike, and then we'll get going on this. So Michael Joseph is an occult researcher who covers secret societies, their doctrines, and influence in the Western civilization for the past 2,000 years. He also covers the relationships of Catholicism, Protestantism, Judaism, Freemasonry, modern science, and general occultism to one another. He can be found at the Schism 206 YouTube channel, and will have a new website with paid members content, which will be released in the near future. This will include a wide variety of content available in various formats for those who join. He is also formerly lapsed Catholic, who's since returned to the church after a 20-year departure, and now actually understands why he is there this time. Mike, what's going on today, man?
Oh, not much. Thanks, Seth, for having me. This should be fun.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. I want to start today by hearing a little bit about you. Your story is super fascinating, from what I understand and what I've heard and what I've read about you. So can you just give our audience just a little bit about yourself, where you stand now, and then we'll head into the topic.
Sure. Try to keep it to the short version. Basically, when I started looking into all these things more actively, was right after the Boston bombing. Some interesting things happened, ran across some interesting people with interesting perspectives, and I lived in Boston at the time. I was a little suspicious about things going on, and so from there, you get led into all these different viewpoints on what's going on with the quote unquote conspiracy, right? And so this ranges from more New Age, occult, Gnostic views, some more, Christian, even kind of American, you know, going back to 1776 revolutionary type of views. Everyone's got their own solution to the problem, but there's a lot of common things that people can identify as problems. But beyond that is where it gets a little messy. And so it's been a lot of sorting through that. I was working really hard to try to be a musician and naively pursuing that goal without being aware of certain things, both personally and in the objective world. And that sort of got transmuted into looking into all the research. And it's for some reason, gotten somewhat popular, and I know that's probably more in the lines of what I'm supposed to be doing, because it's exactly what I never would have expected or wanted. So what I chose and what I wanted to do is not what happened, and what I would have no clue that I would ever be doing, and it started out doing all this stuff just for my own reasons. That's how I ended up putting out some content, because I started, you know, fact-checking, I guess, some of the claims of some people and finding that, you know, some of these claims aren't really very solid. And I'm not doing that in a condemnational way. I'm not trying to accuse people of anything. I think that it's just easy to want to dive into this stuff. And a lot of people have limited time, you know, when you wake up these things, people have jobs and whatever. So you can only do so much. And unfortunately, I found that there was a lot of information that I just thought was incredibly wrong at these presuppositional levels, these core ideologies of what they think is going on. And so I figured, well, maybe people would probably want to know about that. So I started making some videos, and I kind of call it being caught in between the two pillars of kind of like the Protestant occult worldview and the Protestant Christian worldview, and then the more occult Gnostic worldview. And then eventually, through all the research for me, and sort of harmonize and understanding the Catholic worldview and the other elements involved with sort of this battle of Western civilization with Catholics, Protestants, and Judaism all intermingling and sort of interacting with each other in very unique ways and specific ways, and then the other groups that kind of split from all those things. So that kind of sums up where the research is at now and where I'm at. And maybe we'll be able to bring elements of that into today's discussion, because I think with all of this symbolic stuff and making these sort of statements in an esoteric or spiritual way, you can't really avoid those things.
Yeah, and I love that. And I was going to start with something else, but I kind of want to take a different direction now that you've said that. And the thing that I want to ask you, there's actually two questions that I want to ask you. One, is it important to study maybe not even 9/11, but conspiracies in general? And two, what led you down the path of studying 9/11 and the occult symbology that comes with that?
Sure. Well, I think that the conspiracy perspective for me, it was just this intuitive thing where I never really trusted a lot of the things we were told. It wasn't really anything other than some basic red flags, and I didn't really care to pursue it further than that. I always chalked it up to, well, there's rich people with power and they know how to psychologically manipulate people, and as long as they stay in power, then they don't really care if people like me are just going to do what I want to do. And that was sort of how I lived a lot of my life. And then eventually, once I understood there was a religious occult perspective to a lot of these things, with what you were talking about with like 9/11, another thing I did, we can probably draw a few parallels, important ones, to like the JFK assassination. There's a lot of ritual elements built into those locations, one being the World Trade Center itself and the whole complex, and then also Daley Plaza. They mimic, you know, Masonic temples and the Kabbalistic Tree of Life in Jewish mysticism. And since a lot of it is symbolic, a lot of it is transmuting mindsets and using subconscious things to perform magic. And what I mean by magic is, you know, getting people to look at one thing but ignore another for a purpose, and, you know, that kind of thing. And so you can get into that with all the media manipulation around the events and things like that. So there's that element. And then, of course, the conspiracy element of all these things, I think it's important to look at for a lot of reasons, because when people wake up, they're going to be naturally going to that. And unfortunately, you're going to find a lot of just as crazy stuff in that. And it's almost like I feel like it's really not that much different than the Matrix world, as people call it, but it's just at a much deeper level. And I think people get caught sometimes in the same things with the same root sources as they would get caught up in the, you know, normie world, as people call it. I don't really love using those terms, but you get to describe it somehow. And you know, in these deeper levels of looking at this stuff and at least believing there's some sort of guiding hand that is having alternate agendas that are probably not so great for the most of us. So I guess in terms of looking at 9/11 specifically, when I started just basically getting into some of this stuff, that was one of the first things I came across. This guy named Mark Passio, and he was going over more of the occult worldview on these subjects, and he was talking about 9/11 being a ritual, and I thought that was really interesting. And so, you know, you come across different things, and then as I studied all these different areas of occultism, it was fairly easy to apply a lot of these things, parallels, if you will, to things in the event, things that were built into the structures, some of the numbers, stuff like that. And then also in the JFK assassination, how I got to there, that's what I'm more I studied that a lot more. And basically, I thought, well, if there's supposedly occult rituals and symbology and things tied to Masonry and Kabbalah, let me look at Daley Plaza. And I went on Google Maps, looked at it. I'm like, wow, you know, that really kind of looks like the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And then from there, things just snowballed into a descent into partially into madness for a while. And I think that I've been able to pull myself out of it. And I don't really actually go much into all of that occult numerology and things like that anymore. But there was a time that I did that. And now I'm getting much more into just the history. And I do look at a lot of university history, scholarly work, and I try to compare that with the conspiracy history from different angles, whether it be the occult theosophists like Blavatsky, or even people of the, you know, the truther ilk trying to give their version of history. And, you know, taking all of those different viewpoints and then trying to find the common threads in between. And that's pretty much, I guess, all of that in a nutshell.
Yeah. And I think everyone, it's interesting to hear where everyone begins in researching this kind of stuff. Because for me, for 9/11, you know, I was only, let's see, 2001, I was 9 years old. Okay. And so I don't really remember a whole lot. I remember that I was in school, that there was something big that happened, but I didn't really grasp the significance of that event until, really I got into even college, because I just didn't even care, like it was something that happened a long time ago. It was sad. Yes. I understand that. And I'm not trying to, for those of you watching, I'm not trying to downplay what happened, but I'm just telling my own experience, because I bring that up because I think everyone has their own a way that they come across this stuff. And this is what we're trying to do on this channel and in this show in particular, is present you with information that we've come across, and for you to go out and research and make your own decision, because we can tell you all this stuff, and a lot of this stuff that Mike's going to talk about is going to be very weird at first, because especially if you haven't studied the occult, if you haven't studied people like Crowley, if you haven't studied people who believe in specific ritualistic sites and all of this kind of stuff, it sounds crazy at first, but the more you dig into it, the more you realize that there is something behind this. And so for me, I was young and I didn't really care. And I didn't really start doing it until for me, what interests me the most was the structural failure of Building 7 in particular, because Building 7, if you guys aren't aware, and we'll get into this here in a second, Building 7 was a building that wasn't hit by a plane. It was a steel high-rise building, which was supposedly, this is from the official narrative, this was brought down by an office fire, okay, which supposedly melted the steel enough for that a specific column collapsed, causing catastrophic failure of the global failure of the entire building, which is complete bull crap. I'm just going to say that it's complete bull crap, because there's no way that this happened. And for those of you who have been watching my Conspiracy Theory Thursdays with my wife, we've been going through some of these things, but I wanted to discuss this with Mike. So Mike, you said that you started watching, I can't remember the guy's name, but Mark Passio. He was talking about how 9/11 was a ritual. What does that mean? And how could this catastrophe be a ritual?
Sure. Well, I think that the two main elements you want to bring into it is sort of like the Jewish Kabbalah and mysticism aspect, and then sort of like the Crowleyan system that's more transmuting Christianity into a different thing and bringing it into that by using elements of it, like the broad concepts, and then it basically turns into something completely different. But it's easy to fool people to think that that is where it comes from. And this is, the whole debate about Gnosticism and stuff like that, that people will get into. And this is stuff that I covered in my recent occult Catholicism series in depth in a lot of these areas. So people want to expand upon that. They can go to that if they'd like. But so from that viewpoint, you have to look at it from those eyes. You can think that all this stuff is hoo-ha, satanic, or even, complete bullcrap. Some people believe it, right? And so... Yeah. You can have some crazy person who believes that the Easter Bunny is God and we all must bow down and worship, or we should die. And you don't bow down and worship and somebody kills you. Well, that might have been a crazy belief, but it still had a real effect, if you can see what I'm saying. Yeah. I know it's a silly example, but like that's kind of what I'm saying. So looking at their perspectives, there's this idea of unifying the opposites. This is the alchemical process. And what this is really tied to is the occult and underground in the Christian empire in Europe, throughout the quote-unquote dark ages, as they call it. And it's kind of ironic that those dark ages, they didn't allow usury, which is basically fractional reserve banking. So there were, Federal Reserve in those dark ages. Wonder why they're so dark, right?
Yeah.
And so they need the light of this Masonic Kabbalist occultism, I suppose. But the idea of this alchemical process, it can go into the physical and the consciousness or the spiritual, and it's kind of seen as being unified, right? So the idea of going through a mystery religion initiation or Freemasonic initiation or something like that, it's the context, at least from what I've looked into, is about getting rid of the old world way of being. And so the old world is Christian Empire and Christian Europe. And so that is what you're transmuting. And that's what they becomes the lead. Now, here's the interesting thing. There's the angle, and obviously this is an area of great debate, you know, of accusing the Catholic Church of being pagan itself, right? And this is kind of an accusation that can go back to either Constantine or even once the Renaissance happens, there's another accusation there. Now, I'm not denying that there's elements of infiltration that can happen and stuff like that, but is there also an effort to a magical transmutation to get people to focus on the infiltration only and try to paint that as being equal to what Catholicism is without all the other side of the story? And I think that that's what happens a lot by these occultists in particular, and you know, certain Protestant factions will do that too. And so the idea of purging that lead is making that church actually pagan in their mind, right? So if you have a worldview and you feel like that church is pagan superstition, then you're going to try to change that to your will, right? And this ties into Kabbalistic Judaism and it gets into the Talmud. Obviously, they reject Christ. There's a lot of issues about that, passages about him being a bastard son of a whore, Mary, right? Yeah, so this is all, you know, debated stuff. We don't have to go all in depth with that. But Jesus is basically seen as a pagan demon heretic by the Pharisees, right, in the New Testament. And so is there a coordinated effort to try to make the church that claims that it's of Christ into that, if you can see what I'm saying, as a Kabbalistic alchemical act? And so this would be part of this, where your initiation is purging that lead of Saturn, and they're gonna call that old church Saturn, like the pagan Saturn, right? And that is why they're trying to transmute Christmas into Saturnalia. You can see what I'm saying, where now it's all about materialism and presence and, you know, debased material things. And that's part of the transmutation. So in these doctrines, like people like Crowley, even Carl Jung will talk about this, where the alchemical process, you take something to debasement, to darkness, to what their version of the devil is, which is ignorance and just pure material living. And out of that debauchery, you will build out of the ashes a new order, right? A phoenix rising. And so this is what you do in the ritual. You descend into darkness, and it can be very symbolic. You know, Masons, they'll blindfold them and, you know, I'm ignorant, bring me to the light, all that kind of stuff, right? And so you could take, you know, that's a basic paradigm, but you could probably take a lot of those things into some sordid levels where it's just symbolic. Oh, I got a blindfold on and that represents evil and darkness. And there's nothing overly sordid about it. Just some Masons having a funny little Hiram Abiff ritual in a room. They're not sacrificing, you know, people or something like that, right? Yep. But there could be groups that take it to crazy degradation. That's why you hear weird stories about things like the Templars and stuff going on there. And so anyways, that's all part of the ritual. You're purging the old world lead, the old Christendom, and you're rebirthing it into this new understanding, which usually is tied to some sort of Gnostic version of Christianity, where all religions are equal. Christ is equal to Osiris, to Krishna, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But who would that also benefit? The groups that believe Christ to be a heathen deity, right? Just no different than those. So is there a trick where the Masonry is fulfilling a goal of Kabbalistic Judaism that's based on the Talmud, but the Masons are calling it light, right? So it's kind of like with 9/11, right? We couldn't have gone over and destroyed all these nations, you know, surrounding Israel, without calling it freedom and enlightenment, right? The torch of liberty. Yeah. So you can see the same paradigm of manipulation in American matrix world and also in the esoteric Masonic world, or at least you can make a case for that, I should say. And so the point is, all that ritual is built upon destroying the old world and birthing a new one. And so I think that that is really built in to the two pillars being destroyed and then being unified into one freedom tower, right? But really, symbolically, that's freedom from the old world Christendom. And that is really the basis of all the alchemy.
So in, I guess, how these groups, we'll just say the groups, okay, and this encompasses, you know, the Masons, the occultists, the Thelemites, all, you know, all the people that worship these occultists, okay?
All the Illuminists, I would just call it.
Okay, that's all the Illuminists. We'll say that, whether they're chasing the false light or not, so they viewed America before this event as this Christ-centered, society. Is that correct? And that's the old world system that they want to do away with.
Right. I'd say that America has been built upon anti-Catholicism on one level, and in a strange way, anti-Jewish in a way. And the Jews and the Catholics have an interesting relationship where, like, for example, just real quick tangent, like Nazi Germany, they were persecuting both Jews and Catholics. The Catholics that didn't adhere to the racial ideology, because the Catholic teaching is that there is no race element to anything. It's the spirit that matters. But obviously the Nazis were making it about race, and racial thinking was going on in all that time in the late 1800s that led to that. But the Jesuits were persecuted by the Nazis. They were called pacifists, and they had destructive criticisms to the state. Those were the two greatest sins of the Jesuits, according to the Nazis, right? So they were persecuted and seen as subversive groups just as much as Jews were, but for different reasons. So there's an interesting kind of mixed world order, I call it, people like Napoleon, people like Hitler, that will persecute both sides of it. And this is sort of, I think, maybe kind of built into the founding of America. I have to look into it a little bit more, but basically it's kind of a combination of Puritanism, which is basically, quote unquote, what they call Judaizing. And that's not meant to be derogatory. It's just meant to be the reality of the situation. They thought that they were like the Old Testament Israelites on some level coming over to America, and they were persecuted by the Church of England, which they thought was too Catholic, right? And so there's the Puritan faction in America. And then there's the Masonic Deist faction, which is really trying to bring back the pagan Roman Republic before Christianity took over and Constantine allowed it as an official religion in 313. So we're kind of built upon this interesting Protestant, you know, Judaizing, as they would call it, and then also Masonic pagan deism. And so it's a strange hybrid, and then you can kind of see the evolution of that over time, and then maybe now things are sort of coming to fruition, and that will get into some of the occult aspects that we could tie to the divine fire that melts steel beams at will. Tied to the Hebrew letter Sheen, which represents that, and also the planet Pluto in astrology. These things are all tied into the esoteric part of it, and these particular cycles that relate to 1776 being a very important number.
Right. Yeah. And so it's interesting because, you know, I agree with everything that you were saying about, this alchemistic view of kind of rising from the ashes, if you will, and from those ashes there has to be this chaos, order out of chaos. And what better way to do that than a catastrophic event like this, where order is demanded by those affected in the event. And you know, it goes back to the Hegelian dialectic with the antithesis, the thesis, and then the synergy, or the result of a planned event. And so the outcome of 9/11 was moving towards this new age, as Alice Bailey writes about, as Helena Blavatsky writes about, as most of these occultists write about. They want to enter into this new age. What is this new age, and why did they choose 9/11 to do that? Why 2001? Let's get into some of those occult, esoteric meanings at this point.
Right. I think there's also one thing that's important to consider, at least from the more Christian worldview, is that no matter what, all of this is happening under the umbrella of God, right? And so you can bring in ideas of the Catholic Church, as it claims to be, obviously people dispute this, is the new Israel, then they should bear the punishments of old Israel when they don't behave. And that might have something to do with the destruction of Europe, and then carrying over European Christendom that is still ingrained in the people of America, but it is, I would say, rapidly deteriorating. And then look what's happening to us. And maybe 9/11, it's interesting in the cabal, the Kabbalistic aspects and this idea of the sheen flame, the triple flamed letter, a Hebrew sheen, that represents the phoenix rising, the divine fire, all these sorts of things, right? The divine fire that burns a false way of being and resurrects a new way of being. That is their understanding of it. So in terms of Blavatsky and the UN and all these sorts of people, I think that a lot of that theosophy sounds attractive, and it has a lot of nice ideals when you read the philosophy, right? When you read it, it doesn't sound sadistic. It is arrogant at times, but but the problem is, I think that a lot of that has been created as what I call like a golem of religion to do biddings of other people, where it is they are the foot soldiers to do this. And I don't know how many of those people, like at the UN, like if you listen to the one of the main ladies who runs the Lucius Trust, I forget her name, she's like this, you know, kind of old lady with like a little sweet voice. I can't imagine that this woman, I think she's just like duped and is just going along with something that's destructive and doesn't want to believe that it's causing problems, right? And this is kind of the cry of all the social justice warriors and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, they are deluded into thinking that their way of healing the world must be true, and that anytime anybody questions that, they're a fascist or whatever, racist. What do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But are they at the top of the heap, right? Are they right, the ones pulling the strings? No, they're just proxy warriors. So that's how I view a lot of these theosophists and even Freemasons in a broader sense. I'm not saying that there's not ones that are higher up in those circles that know what they're doing. And this could get back to certain Masons in Britain creating the French Revolution, I would say.
And that's a good point, because, I mean, all these writers channeled their information. They, you know, and so they are puppets. I mean, Alice Bailey in particular, she had her ascended master, the Tibetan, I forgot his name, Dawith Kulal, like I think.
The cool guy or quill guy or something.
Yeah, exactly. DK. Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they are propagating this plan that they didn't even really develop. And I write about this in an article that I wrote on Alice Bailey. Actually, it's a series that I'm going through right now. But Alice Bailey, it wasn't even her idea. It was her ascended master's plan for this new age and how to disciple all of these people and to get them to accept the enlightened state and all of this weird oneness, globalistic ideology that makes an individual, erases the individualistic nature of a person and meshes us into this one global entity. And so, I see that kind of 9/11 taking some of those aspects and really lighting a fire beneath it, if you will, because they needed something to ignite that passion. They needed something to ignite people accepting, oh, well, we all just need to get along because we don't want these types of terroristic attacks on us, you know, all this type of stuff. But it's sinister in nature, because it doesn't come from human beings. They're just, like you said, proxy warriors. They're just, you know, standing in line doing whatever their ascended masters tell them. So let's talk about this is particularly, I think there's a lot of Crowleyan ideology mixed in with some of the numerology and the numbers of the planes and the height of the towers and all of this stuff. And then, you mentioned how there were two pillars or two towers that were meshed into one. What does all this mean? Because a lot of people don't know what all of this stuff means as it relates to Freemasonry, as it relates to Thelema, you know, conquering through the will and all this kind of stuff. How would you begin telling someone about this type of stuff?
I don't really know. I'm always under the assumption when I do my work that some people have looked at some of this stuff before. That's kind of how I view it. I'm more of like trying to sort out some things in the quote unquote truther world to try to weed out, you know, bad information, or at least show some red flags about particular viewpoints that might have some problems with them. Right. You can still adhere to them if you'd like, but at least understand these things. That's kind of my approach. And so for me, if I was going to try to do that, I would just say, bring it back to that alchemical ritual. There are two opposites. There's a conflict. They bash together. And there's also this hidden middle pillar. That's the unification of the two that the quote unquote adepts know about. And then they get to manipulate the quote unquote profane, right? People like you and me, or any other exoteric religion, as they would call it. And through this process, bring them to their deity, to their light, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of similar to the concept of Lucifer in Christianity, where, you know, he wants to be the boss, right? Wants to be like the Most High. It's almost like Lucifer wants to rule and do righteous things, but it's all from a place of pride, so it will never actually be that. And that's usually what happens with a lot of these things. I mean, look at the European Union that's kind of built upon those theosophical UN-type principles. They're all striving for this unity of Europe, but it's not the same version as the old Catholic Christendom. They're putting together this transmuted Gnostic version of it in a way. But it's like, it's funny because the people in the New Age, they kind of crave this oneness, right? And I think that there is a real equality amongst human beings, but the way you define that is very different than all the SJW types and then these theosophist types and stuff like that. But the broad concept, it's still there. It's just like freedom. Think about like the Freedom Tower, right?
Yeah.
Freedom's a word. We all think it's good, but we all have a different definition of it. And is the freedom for these adepts destroying the old world and then they get to rule? But is that really freedom for the rest of us? But we all get tricked into believing that it is. And then we keep seeing the results of that biting us back in the face. And we don't want to admit that maybe there's a problem here. And so with this alchemical ritual, I would say, look at the two towers. It's the North and South Tower, right? So those are the North and South pillars of Freemasonry. Everything in Freemasonry is built upon kind of like that Solomon archetype or magic or that temple, which they, it's symbolic, but at the same, in a metaphysical sense, an abstract sense, a consciousness sense, but then they bring it to the below, right? As above, so below. So they build a building out of it. And I would say that the Twin Towers kind of represented the WASP establishment of the 20th century. You know, the Rockefellers, they come from these Protestant families that came out of America, and that sort of like the prosperity gospel. They did very well for themselves. They had a lot of philanthropy. They built a lot of universities and stuff like that. But is there a certain pride attached to that where they might want to do good, but do good things actually happen down the road, right? Is there an evolution that turns into something else and reveals what's really going on? And so, you know, now you could probably argue that there's a lot more of the Jewish power in control of America. And, you know, that's what ended up taking over the Twin Towers with Silverstein, right? And not too long before they went away and he got a bunch of money. Yeah. And so you could see like the changeover, right? And not saying like, I'm saying this in an organic way, and then whatever conspirators that are conscious about it behind the scenes, whatever. But I still think that there's a very organic process that it's happening as a collective subconscious thing of like people choosing this without really knowing it. And then, you know, obviously in the Old Testament, God judges nations, not just individual people. And so there is a relationship between us personally and the collective, whether we want to admit it or not. And so that really, with the event, you have to have those elements, a purgatorial fire, a rebuilding, and then there's astrological and numerological components that in that worldview, you tap into them. Basically, there are these principles in the universe, and this is actually just kind of like been our viewpoint of science in the modern world since Newton, where the universe operates alone. It doesn't need a creator to drive things. It's just mechanical in nature. And us adepts of occultism, we know how to tap into those forces and use them better than the lower people. But in their mindset, we're doing a good thing for these profane people by evolving them through conflict. That's kind of, even the UN Lucius Trust website says that harmony through conflict will bring about their age of Aquarius.
Right. Yeah.
And so obviously there's a lot of conflict going on around the 9/11 event. But before that, I mean, you know, just like with anything, America's been split in two between left and right politics arguing. But then all of a sudden we can all get together and unify in this one thing that immediately the next day we got to go to war. And then, hey, everyone, please go out and buy things. Please go out and shop and get the stock market back and, you know, everything. And that will show those terrorists who's boss, right? If we just be American and buy a bunch of stuff. I remember that happening. And that was something that really disturbed me when personally after 9/11. And I was just like horrified that QVC is selling all their freedom pins and people are writing songs and everyone's buying them and making money. I'm like, this is crazy how much people are capitalizing off of this.
Yeah.
But is that Americans just doing what Americans are doing? You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm not justifying. I'm just saying like nobody sees anything wrong with this. Right. Yeah. Except for people like me and obviously you and people in this world, there's something not right about that system. And so, you know, I guess when it comes to the magic of it, there is magic built into money too. And so it's really a holistic thing. You can take all these different areas and just bring it into this one event. And it's symbolic of two things being separate and now they're gone. And now we have them being merged together. And then they built the Freedom Tower at 1776 feet high. And in Kabbalah, that's the master numbers are important. They seem having a lot of power. So the number 444, that would be an important, powerful number. You times that by another four, you get 1776. And so there's some interesting numerology built into the number itself. And then think about bringing that back to the original revolution of America,
right. The
Bavarian Illuminati, which I think that there's a little bit too much ado about them, but I do think that their stuff is a factor. But the basic revolutions of the French Revolution, the American Revolution, those really set the tone for the modern world and really shifted the power of the old world to the new.
Yeah, so true. And you know, Crowley was the one who said that they shall know us by our signs and symbols and numbers. And you know, Crowley in Thelema, numbers mean everything to Crowley. He, you know, 11 was the most powerful number. And so these aren't just, especially to these, I mean, we can look at them from like a Christian perspective and be like, psh, there's no power in numbers, you know, like who cares? But these people act like they would die, you know, for these numbers, what they represent and what they mean. And I think there's a little bit more to it than we give credit because, you know, for instance, the flood, in the Old Testament was 40 days. Okay. Jesus, how many days was he in the wilderness? 40. I mean, is it just pure coincidence that both of them were exactly 40 days or is there more to the number 40? You know what I mean? So there is something behind it that these occultists use. And I think they're just being deceived. Like we were talking about earlier, you know, this lady that is the spokesperson for Lucius Trust at the UN or whatever, she's probably not a Satanist or this occultist, or she may be, but.
Well, by the way, we would look at it, you know what I mean? By doing strictly evil, she probably thinks she's doing good, but by definition, she's actually would be Luciferian because that's what they view as enlightening in theosophy.
Right. Right.
Sorry to jump
off, no, and that's a good clarification. But my next question for you is, okay, so we have these two buildings, right? And they represent this, this old world, right? And they were demolished and then they come together as the one, symbolizing this new age, this age of Horus or the Aeon of Horus or the age of Aquarius, whatever they want to call it. What about Building 7 and the Pentagon? Why were those two buildings, one, why was the Pentagon hit? And two, why did Building 7 need to collapse? Or what's significant about those two buildings?
Yeah, I guess we could probably bring in some of the numbers in here. And not to mention that Building 7 was called the Solomon Brothers building, Solomon's Temple, right? And I would say that the two pillars represent, in a way, still a more like modern Masonic version, but I think it's more of that WASP power, and it's still kind of a symbolic representation of both the old and the new world, and now it's just taking it straight into the new. I guess that's like a transitioning point. That's at least my perspective. But back to the Building 7, You know, you were indicating that there was a divine fire that happened that took that out, according to the official narrative. And then, of course, the Pentagon, a lot of people debate about what happened there. But it's always these projectile things and these fires that's part of the kind of like the active force, the active principle in occultism, which is just, you know, the explosive nature of basically divinity, I guess. And then this is the idea that Mars represents the number five or the Pentagon. In Kabbalah, it's the fifth sphere. In Kabbalah, there's all these different spheres on this sort of tree of life diagram. People can look into that in their own time or go to my channel and look at some of the JFK stuff. But so you have seven being a divine number. And what you were saying about the numbers, I would say that numbers do have power, but you can also make them into an idol, right? Yeah. There's an idolatry of numbers where you take it to this mystical level that doesn't really exist. God might allow people to think that, you know, they're manipulating them or whatever, but ultimately you can't change reality through numbers and be the one in control. You can think you can, but good luck.
Yeah.
And in the end, at least. And so you have all these numbers built into it. So with building seven, you get a seven. There's always going to be a lot of sevens around in a lot of these rituals. And, you know, think about the Book of Revelation from the occult perspective. They view that book as basically an initiation. They think that all of that is symbolic in terms of like the destruction that happens in Revelation is an allegory for the destruction that happens in your mind once you realize your old religion was false. And that your resurrection is your inner Christ rising, and you understand that that was all, you know, crap, right? That's the viewpoint. And so if you take that and you bring it into this ritual, are you trying to say to the mass of people that this old way of being, this old religion was crap, and we're initiating you into the new one, the new Christ, right? The equality Christ, we all just have this divine consciousness and evolution towards. You know, you can get into all like the crazy transhumanist stuff now that might be attached to that. But so there's those numbers. The two World Trade Center buildings, they have a design going, or they had a design going up them that was like three pillars that go like that, and then they separate out. It looks just like the Tree of Life. It's like a bunch of Tree of Life's going up and down. You can see that similar pattern in Daily Plaza. So you have Tree of Life illusions, north and south, and then the flight numbers. 11, like you were talking about, Crowley says that's the number of magic itself, and there's a master number, right? And then 9, 11, obviously. 175, that is a book by Crowley, Liber 175, which is about the invocation of deity and part of this magic ritual uniting to specific deities, stuff like that. 93, that's a big Crowley number. That's the number of his holy guardian angel, which he identifies as, you know, the will, because in the New Testament, if you take the Greek word thelema, will, it's like thy will be done when the Lord's Prayer is given, right, in the New Testament. That word in Greek gematria equals 93. I believe that's the context. So that's why that's their will. But basically Masonry and his version of occultism, they're like inversions of Catholicism. They'll even admit this. Albert Pike will admit that Freemasonry is Catholicism inverted. But again, that Dark Ages version. And then 77, that's an important master number, two sevens together. And this really gets into a lot of things, like, you know, Crowley will talk about Oz, OZ, and you'd have to, I can't really get into the details, but basically they mean these specific numbers in Hebrew that unify together to become 77. And then Daily Plaza, you had a north-south route of 77, of Elm Street and Commerce Street, and the middle pillar was Main Street, the unification of the two. And, you know, you have all these same numbers showing up. And then if you add up, Crowley has a little glyph, like a Babylon glyph, and there's all these sevens on it. If you add up all those sevens, it equals 175. So that's pretty interesting. So just to bring it all back to the core point, you have all these numbers involved in both events, JFK and 9/11, and JFK was 11/22, right? And you had the Solomon Illusion building, and in between the pillars there was a sphere called the Great Spherical Caryatid. And Caryatid is just a name for a female pillar, or like a wisdom pillar, right? So there, even though it's a sphere, there's an allusion to a pillar, a middle pillar, and it was right in between the two towers. And what happened during this event is that sphere was cracked. And guess what they did? They brought it, I think, to Battery Park, and they lit an eternal flame there. Yeah. So, of course, JFK, they light an eternal flame, and that's the Sheen divine flame, the triple flame, right, of Hebrew Kabbalah. And so that's all an archetype for this judgment and the phoenix rising and the active transmutation and will of their understanding of God. And so that's kind of built into the numbers, and then building seven and Twin Towers with their divine fire that destroyed everything. You can almost see like the official narrative is built upon Kabbalistic principles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. And I guess, man, building seven, it's just so interesting to me, because the whole thing, it represents just the layout of the square, right? Because you have the two pillars, and then you have Solomon's temple, right? And this is totally Masonic in nature, but and then Kabbalistic as well. It's just fascinating to me. That's why I love talking about this stuff. But why do you think they used planes to bring it down? What was significant from an esoteric standpoint about using planes? Or was just a way to cause destruction, and or was there meaning behind it?
I would say that you could definitely make a parallel to it, and you'd have to get into astrology a little bit, because the idea is that from the cult perspective, astrology is the above, that you use that system, you know, that system that operates independently and is impersonal, you mold that to bring about below, right? And so if there's particular alignments that in your view have significance and powers that are being generated that you could tap into, it's almost like, you know, viewing like weather, right? You could have a hurricane, but if you know how to tap into that power, you could use it for something else. So the idea is like, well, is there an astrological hurricane going on, and can we use that to our will, right? That would be kind of the viewpoint, an analogy, whether you believe such things are possible or not, that's how they would view it.
Yeah.
And so there was an important alignment. I'll just give one example. There's an opposition. So on the zodiac, you have Saturn in Gemini. So we have Saturn, the planet of structure and form and authority, right? And Saturn represents the old world. And it's right in the middle of Gemini. It's like 15 or 14 degrees if there's 30 degrees in the sign. So it's right in the middle of the two pillars of Gemini, basically. And when they opened the Twin Towers officially, I believe it was 1973, I think it was like April 4th or something like that, Saturn was in the exact same place. So Saturn was in roughly 14 or 15 degrees Gemini when they opened it. And when it officially closed, it had made a full cycle through the zodiac. It's called the Saturn return. And it happened right at the same exact spot of the zodiac 28 something years later. Saturn returned roughly 28 to 30 years. And this is why they say when you know, 28, 30 years old, usually things, the idea of like reaping and sowing. A lot of times people have a little bit of a crisis there because they are getting returned back to them what they might not have done that they should have done or something like that. And so there's a judgment aspect to it as well. And so there's an opposition of Saturn and Pluto. Now, Pluto, again, that represents the divine fire of Kabbalah, the Sheen flame, that eternal flame, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that destroys matter, right? And when two things are opposite, that alignment in astrology is seen as very tense. It's very potent. It's very powerful. So you have the divine fire opposite the Twin Towers and its structure and form and the old authority. Now, what's interesting, back to the planes, the Pluto is in the sign of Sagittarius. Sagittarius is the only projectile sign, and it is, you know, the archer, right? It's like an arrow, right? So if you're shooting a projectile in across, and it's a divine fire, which the planes are, you see what I'm saying? Like, isn't it strange? And like I said, these are archetypes that you could play with And this is why you could never obviously prove anything from this. This is all very right. symbolic and abstract thinking, but this is right. the principles of the system. And so you can see an official story kind of being molded to tailor to the astrology. And then right at the moment of the first plane hitting, the planet Mercury is making an alignment here. And Mercury, it just not to be overly complicated, it just rules the sign of Gemini. It has an intrinsic relationship to Gemini. So Mercury intermingles in an exact alignment, making like a Pythagorean triangle. And, you know, when you look at the horizon and you see the sun come up in the morning and the sun keeps going, that's the ascendant point in astrology. It's just the eastern horizon.
Right.
And it will keep changing as quickly as the sun moves, right? So at the very moment of impact of the first plane, Mercury was right on the horizon line. And it's just like in the Apollo moon launch, when they launched it, the moon was right at the horizon. So the idea of that is it's bringing it right into focus for the consciousness of everybody in the world. So when you're launching a moon launch and you have the moon at the focal point of a chart where everyone's supposed to be conscious of it, then there's some magic going on there too. And so you can see, once you understand a little bit about the astrology, even if you don't believe in such things, you can see how it transposes to the official narrative.
And it's interesting that astrology is used, because in Revelation chapter 12, what do we see? We see astrological signs in the heavens of the great dragon, or Hydra, I guess you could say, at the base of Virgo, getting ready to devour the child that's coming out of the baby. And so do you personally, and this is a personal question, do you study astrology to look for things that are happening in the stars that might correlate to what's going on in the world?
Okay, this is a complex topic, and people are probably going to flame me for this, but I don't care. I understand why. I actually do astrology, but I have very strict regulations on it. And actually, it's never in context of how it's always demonized, where you don't soothsay, you don't forecast things, you don't predict events. There's nothing you can predict about it that is certain. And even in Catholic teaching, it's actually Thomas Aquinas talks about astrology, how it can indicate tendencies of people.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to believe this, but it's okay. It's kosher, I guess, to believe it in Catholicism, at least, that, but God supersedes everything, and mankind can choose the good through the grace of God and help of God. And you can overcome your passions. So for example, if I grew up in an alcoholic family, I'm probably more predisposed to become an alcoholic. But I'm not fated to that. It could seem like I am if I don't understand that we have free will, and then that if we search to God for help and have humility, we can overcome that. And so that's kind of the point. You can never get rid of the free will aspect, and you can never get rid of the power of God intervening. And as long as you do some things within those restrictions, then you're not violating Catholic teaching. Obviously, people aren't Catholic. They'll believe it's pagan. So again, this is my whole thing.
No, I'm not Catholic, and I agree with you. I think once we give our loyalty to Yahweh, I mean, you look at the New Testament, the disciples were practicing divination. They were casting lots for disciples and doing some other things that were seen as divination. And so were they doing witchcraft? You know, no, they had placed their loyalty in Yahweh and used these things to it as benefit to the Lord. And I think astrology can be used for that as well. It, like you said, it's not to get all esoteric and occultic with it, but it can be very informative. So continue. Sorry. Just wanted to
So my basic thing is, I observe the world astrology, mundane astrology, from the perspective of how the elites might use it. I don't really care about it other than that. Gotcha. The only thing I identify with it is personal natal charts. And then honestly, this is the way I view it. I actually have no problem with people thinking it's completely bogus and there's no real anything to it at all. But I think the system of it invokes a self-reflection that can be useful if you do it in the right spiritual system so for example, like a Rorschach test, right? You look at a painting or some sort of abstract picture, And then you assimilate what it means to you. And then from that, you figure out, well, how does that relate to my life and maybe traumas I have, or am I projecting something not good onto that? And how do you solve that? That's kind of how I view it from a psychological perspective, but not at all in the Jungian psychology way or anything like that. Yeah. Again, I think that there's elements of it that can be useful in that context, but I would never use it for anything other than that. And I actually don't even recommend that everybody would be involved in it. Only if people have some strange kind of attachment to the idea of it, or like they have some weird, you know, like, so like, this is kind of my goal in all this is like be this bridge for people who are into occultism to like cross over into Christianity if they find there's something not quite right about it, but they still are kind of attached to, you know, some of these sorts of things that are seeming as mysterious in a grandiose way that kind of glorifies the idea of a creator and having some sort of purpose in all of this. And so that's kind of my angle on it. And if people want to elaborate on that more, they can go to my cult Catholicism series and I explain it all in better detail there. But in terms of like the elites using it and stuff like that, I mean, that's all in that system of like tapping into the forces of an impersonal God and these sorts of things. And, you know, to me, that's all just going to lead down a very bad path. And unfortunately, I think it's similar to a lot of things, right? You can have an education institution, but what is the spirit that is going through that and driving it? Is the building itself evil because it's education? A lot of us think that now because it's been so corrupted.
Yeah.
But you know, it's no different than the Bible, right? I mean, look how Freemasonry and Gnosticism uses the Bible. It is right. A book there, but that spirit that is going through the interpretation of it is probably leading to some false things. At least that would be the viewpoint from the Christians. And so that's kind of how I view some of these things, but like I said, I impose very strict regulations on it, and don't try to make an idol out of it like anything else, like the numbers, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's wise. That's good saying. And it's interesting because I think, you know, what does the Lord tell us in Genesis? You know, that the heavens are for signs and seasons, and you can debate when Genesis chapters 1 through 11 were really written, or the whole book itself, and who was it written by. But the fact is that it's there. And so that the Jewish people, you know, use, and even like Abraham and all these patriarchs, they use these symbols and in the heavens to, you know, even the wise men, they saw the star from the east, you know, they were using astrological events to dictate their life course, you know, because these wise men had to travel for a couple of years probably from the east to the west to find this, you know, so that was a life change for them. But all that to say is that there's more to it than I think we as Christians, the typical Protestant or Catholic church has given to these types of things. And I think it warrants a deeper look and a deeper understanding into them, into the things that we've been discussing today. I mean, the Lord, you know, Jesus said in Matthew that when you see these things begin to happen, take heed because your redemption draws near, you know? So I think it's super important for us to be interested in this type of stuff. And that's the whole reason that I wanted to bring you on. That's the whole reason I have this channel, is to get people interested in things that they may have never heard about or really understand. And it's not to dive into occultism and become a new ager or become this or that. It's just doing the research and understanding really where we come from. So, man, we've been going for an hour now and it's flown by. I think we'll end today here, and then I'll chat with you when we get off about maybe continuing the discussion on some other aspects of 9/11 in particular. But is there anything that you'd like to add before we end today, Mike?
I guess just in context of what you were just talking about, maybe, you know, in those sorts of topics, you always have to tread lightly and not dive in too deep and be very careful about it. And this was a lot of the stuff that was going on in the Middle Ages. You know, these sorts of things were being brought into focus. And I think that to kind of wrap up, there's another misconception about, you know, things like correspondences in the Bible to zodiac things, you know, like 12 apostles, 12 signs, whatever. those are things that the zeitgeist type people will look at and be like, well, Christianity is just paganism.
Right.
But there's an alternative view to that where you don't have to try to deny that relationship, where people say, well, is there a gospel in the stars? And there's a certain tradition that understands the reality of that, and the ancient Israelites and Jews that were not mixing with the nations too much and adhering to idolatry of other gods or impersonal deities, they were able to hold on to that. But unfortunately, how things have taken over, that has been kind of wiped out, or there's like a kind of a veil over that. Yeah. And so the other teaching is that a lot of these religions, they're disfigured, they're in error, right, but they do have parts that point towards Christ. And this is why a lot of the Greeks accepted Christ. And this is why the gospel was written, you know, using Greek terminology like logos, right? The order of the universe. Right. That's what Christ is in John and stuff like that. So it's appealing to the Gentiles because now the time is supposed to be opened up for everybody. And the idea is that the Greeks, their pagan philosophy got the closest to the Israelite tradition. And so that is why a lot of that is intermingled into the New Testament. And the other interesting thing is the Apostle Paul, he gets abused from both sides. Some people say he's a Gnostic because he's using Gnostic language. And some people say that's great because they're Gnostics, or people say, well, he's a heretic and we got to throw out Paul. But right, what's interesting, if you do a closer study on it, this is the teaching. He's using the language of his opponents and he's right, putting Christ on top. And so it doesn't matter what system that they've come up with that's an error. He can even use that against them and right, bring it back to Christianity. And I think that that is a healthier way of approaching pagan ideology that a lot of people are attracted to for a lot of reasons in these broad concepts. But I think you can bring it back to the core of Christianity and be like, well, if Christ even says there is sort of a binding and loosing in heaven and earth in an intimate relationship, why couldn't there be an aspect of the stars that predicts the real, true incarnation of God as a real physical act? And that's what most of the occultists want to deny, right?
Yeah.
And my question is, why couldn't it be both, right?
Yeah.
Because there's the, again, that to me, that dialectic where a lot of Protestants would deny the astrotheology, as you would call it. And then the occultists will say, well, that's all it is, and Jesus isn't literal. They'll bash each other all day about that. But my position is, well, could it be both?
Right.
So well, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, no, it just goes back to, you know, Satan twisting everything that was good for his own benefit and for evil, right? Because, I mean, like you brought up the word, that the Bible intrinsically is just words, but the spirit that operates through through understanding and through, you know, the interpretation can be wrong. Because that's what Satan was doing, tempting Jesus, right? He used scripture, but he twisted it, taking something that was true and twisting it to something that was false, that was untrue. And that's exactly what these occultists do. And that's why I think their stuff is so powerful, because it does have truth contained in it, but it's just the wrong interpretation. It has a wrong worldview that they're viewing it through. And it's interesting because I was reading an article that a satanic group that I follow on Facebook put out. It was a Satanist interpretation of John and how John's revelation, and how revelation was just a mythicized copy of what the Hellenistic Greeks were propagating at that time. And I understand why he was saying that, because he has this worldview that he reads the Bible through. And so we also need to have a worldview that we view everything with. And you were exactly correct in saying that you have to be careful with a lot of this stuff, because if you don't have the right worldview and you just come into it full blown, you're not going to understand it from a biblical aspect. And so, gosh, if you're watching this, I would just encourage you to do a lot more research, to stay in the Word every day, to really get a good basis and foundation in the Word of God, so that you can approach these types of topics with a biblical understanding, so that you can look at a ritualistic catastrophe like 9/11 and see, without delving into the details, if you want to call it too much, but you can see the ideology of some of these occult groups behind it through the symbols and numbers and everything that they do. Man, that was a great ending, I think, to this interview. And so thanks, Mike, for coming on. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom and the knowledge that you shared today. So thanks, guys, for tuning in. And you guys know the saying, don't be lazy, do the research. We'll catch you on the next episode.